In the last years and decades, dark rides really have improved. And when we think about the very first installation of a dark ride, when we think about the usual nostalgic ghost trains we see on carnivals and fun fairs, they have gone a long way till today. And there are so many different kinds. We have moving vehicles with more dimension of movements, so they can tilt and rotate. We have trackless dark rides. We have loads of different systems when we think about interactive dark rides. And this episode will focus on dark rides, because this will be a really quite interesting interview with somebody who is responsible for some really well-known dark rides. And if you are asking yourself, who the hell is speaking? Hi, my name is Stefan Burian, and welcome to How to Freizeitpark Abroad, the business podcast for leisure makers. As I said, my name is Stefan Burian, and I am a freelancing consultant for leisure attractions of any size and kind, with a main focus on operations, HR, and guest experience. And I really love dark rides as a professional and as a fan. I have to say, I'm a really huge fan of dark rides, especially on those old retro vintage rides. And if you're looking for some really cool installations, I can suggest to visit the Vienna Prater, which is, I believe, famous for its old ghost trains. And they are two really nice new installations with modern technology and modern ride systems. But today we will talk about something else, because we are talking more about interactive installations. And my guest today is nobody else than Benoît Cornet. He was the former CEO of Altaphase, who are responsible for really great dark rides, but we will figure it out in a second. So here is the interview with Benoît Cornet and about his newest adventures with Bold Move Nation. Sometimes you would say it is a bold move to change within a company, or change your or leave your company on some point to found a complete new adventure. And my guest today did already this. He was working for a very well-known company within this industry, and he did this bold move and really founded Bold Move Nation, which is his newest company. And we will talk about dark rides, we will talk about interaction, and we will talk about Benoît Cornet, who is my guest today. Hey, Benoît.
Good morning.
Good morning. Where do I catch you right now? Is it in Brussels?
I'm in Brussels. I'm in our offices in Brussels, right in the center, in the heart of Brussels, in a very fantastic place called Tour et Taxi, which is a masterpiece of Art Nouveau, which is one of the heritage that you can find in Brussels. So it's very, very cool looking place.
And talking about cool looking places, you have built some cool looking places in your past, or you were accompanying some of those projects. But when we come to this point, let's put a step backwards and talk about yourself. And please introduce yourself. Who are you, and how did you come into this industry?
All right. So I'm Benoît, of course. I'm a bit too old for what I would like to be. But so I was born in the early 60s, let's put it this way. So I had the chance to see the men walking on the moon almost live, because I still, my memory, my best memory of my young ages. I started as a financial analyst. That's kind of funny, because actually my education didn't lead me at all to the world of entertainment. I was actually, I worked for a big corporation, American corporation, doing financial analysis for many years. And then I moved on. I mean, I took a first bold move in moving to another company, being in the pre-press industry. So all the being there a business manager, and it was a company from the Middle East, from Israel to be. And so actually that was the first strange move of my career, because actually they hired me without knowing who I was. I mean, it was some sort of a misunderstanding in the candidates, and so I happened to be coming in the place of someone else, but they gave me the job. So it really looks like some stuff that only happened in movie, but that happened to me. So I mean, I found myself doing a job that I barely knew what it was about, but I was enthusiastic. And I think that was the first, I would say, element in defining my career, is that I'm always going where I can bring some enthusiasm. So that was actually the initial step. So I've worked with those guys for 7 years, being, having to deal with a very, very different culture of my original culture, my original background, being a good Christian and working in a Jewish company, an Israeli company. So you can imagine that it can be kind of interesting, but with respect and interest, I mean, you can move a long ways. And then after that one, I've been I fell on a friend that was actually one of my colleagues in my very first the company I started working with, and he told me about a crazy concept of, it was, those were the year of Matrix, if you remember, and so this kind of transporting people in fictional spaces and all those kind of what people call today augmented reality, virtual reality. We were in 2000, and that was really the beginning of a new wave of those kind of stuff. I mean, it was not completely new, but it was a new wave already, a relaunch of the virtual reality and the augmented reality. And I started a company, and we called it Alterface. Why? Because we wanted to use the body as an interface. So interface on one hand, Alterface on the other. And so that was the original positioning of this company. That was totally different than what it became afterwards. But that was actually more an experiment. I would make it more like kind of a moment factory, if you can think about something. We were more in that kind of that business, more for museum technical centers. So I've been working a lot with museums and technical center. And then it evolved to what we know today.
Wow, that's a long journey, isn't
A bit too long. I wish it was shorter, but okay. We can't say too much on that.
But when I hear now that you are mentioning Matrix and you're really trying to connect this to your founding days of Alterface, that means that technology was always an important part within your career and your things you did.
Actually, yeah, it's kind of funny because, yes, indeed. I mean, I'm not a technological freak, but I'm really interested in technological stuff. So, I mean, I think the blend of culture, of people, of social, I'm per se, I'm not a social person, so I can live alone very happily. I don't have really a problem, but I tend to be able to be, how to say that, to be not obsessed, but really to be interested in watching the others, looking at the others. I mean, and I have a deep interest for people, how they will live, who they are, so I can spend hours in places just walking around and just looking at people. I don't need to interfere. I like to be drowned in the crowd, and then just to look at people. It fascinates me. And technology is another, so I'm pretty handy. So I've been a I've done a lot of techno stuff too when I was young. So I've been an amateur radio. So I built my own radios. I've done then sailing. So I've built boats, fiberglass work. I mean, all of that. But I've done breeding animals. Every time you can go all for a project, you can go full blast into a project, you can count me in. Frankly, this is the kind of stuff I like to do.
Sounds a little bit like you're planning the next real life Jurassic Park with real bred dinosaurs and new technology.
I think the chance I have is to be curious. Okay, that's a big chance. I think it's people say it's a when I was young, my mother said that I was too curious, and I think no, you're never curious enough. And I think this is really what is important. Curiosity is to make sense of the curiosity, and I found an answer to my problems, quote unquote. I mean, if I call that a problem, I don't think it's a problem. But I mean, I found an answer to that listening to this famous speech of Steve Jobs, connecting the dots. And actually, this is the first time that someone put a theory, or let's say an explanation, to what I was trying to do. So it was kind of a. I'm not comparing myself to Steve Jobs, but I mean, what he was describing, I says, hold on, this is more or less what I'm trying to do. So basically, you discover a lot of stuff. You are permanently looking for stuff, interested in everything. I'm Wikipedia, number one reader, because every time I hear something, I will go on Wikipedia and try to understand what is the story, who is what, etc. And I'm trying to connect all those elements together in order to make sense out of it.
Yeah, and can when we talk about history and talking about things that are making sense, can you think back to this moment where you built with AlterFace your very first project, and that your thought dots were connected for the very first time, and you see that like a ride is functioning?
Yeah, actually, if you think about Desperado, Desperado was an interesting element. The first Desperado, because basically, I was looking at in some sort of we were dealing with dark right-ish type of experience, and then, I mean, I was banging my head on the walls because I was visiting a lot of parks, and a lot of parks would say, "Yeah, okay, it doesn't exist. We don't really understand what it is." And I says, "It's some kind of fun stuff people do together." Sitting in a room, but it's dynamic, it has something happening on the and so that was kind of very broad, and then suddenly very broad ideas. So suddenly I've been to a laser tag, and then I says laser tag is interesting, but I mean it's not good as such. Then we've been to a 4D cinema, and then we've been to a motion platform, and then I start to connecting this stuff. So I say, I like this, I like that, I like that. Maybe I'm the only one to like it. So I kind of assemble some ideas, and I've been visiting a couple of parks with these ideas, and I told them, "See, I don't know if it makes any sense, but tell me what you think of it." And then one park in France, Frépertuis, just the name of the park, told me, "You know what? It's interesting. It's not there, but it's interesting." And so I've been to another park called Bobbejaanland, and I've done the same trick. And they said, "Yeah, it's interesting." He says, "Can you do something around that?" "Yeah." "How much would it cost?" "I have no idea." "So, what is your budget?" And he says, "We have a budget." At the moment, it was 250,000 euro. I says, "250,000 euro looked to me like a lot of money." So I says, "I can do it." So actually, I've sold the Desperado, one a 60 seat and another one a 35 something seat, without a concept. Frankly, just based on an idea, pitching, and the guys saw me, and I don't know if they felt pity for me being so enthusiastic about being able to do something, or that they, or they truly believed in what I was coming up. But then we built in less than 6 months the first two rides, and we opened the two Desperado at the same time, and that was the beginning of a pretty cool journey.
I still remember that I was, I think, in at Bobbejaanland back then when the Desperado ride was open. And for the listeners who really can't can get a grasp of what this ride is, it's basically the mixture of those rides you have already mentioned. It's a 4D cinema, it's a motion base, and it's laser tag. So it's an interactive installation where you sit on a like a horse seat, and it moves, and you will have this 4D movie on the screen, and you shoot targets on the screen. And I was really intrigued because it's a really pretty concept for especially smaller attractions or parks. So what was your first big learning with this selling those rides to the very first parks?
First, I think we, it didn't, it was not a smooth sailing. I remember that the time that EAS, so the IAPA Expo Europe, was still in February. So it was, we had actually IAPA Orlando in October, and then we had to wait until beginning of the season, or just before the beginning of the season, we had this strange EAS, we called it. And so I was supposed to install the ride in April, and I was still searching for the technology to do the shooting in actually in February. So I've been to Vienna with my car. I've been driving 180 kilometer per hour with a trailer. Can you imagine? So we have been stopped two times by the police, near Frankfurt and in Bavaria. Every time they were saying, "You can't drive so fast." I said, "You know, I need to be in Vienna." So we've been driving all the way with a mock-up of a seat, and with something that we could call the setup, but I mean, it was actually a laser tag with, you know, laser elements behind the screen, and we were shooting at pretty fine points on the screen. So it was disastrous. And we showed that to the people and to the two clients, you know, Bobby and Frépertuis, that look at me simply says, "Are you sure you're going to do it?" I say, "Yeah, no problem, no problem." You know, myself, I had absolutely no clue because the system didn't work. And so going back to Belgium, I really say, okay, now we need to make it happen. So we had to make the magic come. And I would say plan a bit longer in advance. But, you know, sometimes emergency, urgency is not bad for creation, you know?
True,
So
yeah.
I think you would have given us 2 more years to do it. We would have taken the 2 more years and wouldn't have come with something any different. So sometimes it's good to rush, and you will see that in bold moves. Sometimes we are moving very fast. Why? Because when the time is right, the time is right. Planning is good, but the time needs to be right.
Sure, and I think there is always some kind of luck in our adventures. We strive, especially when we're looking at our other. When I look at my career, I was so lucky so many times that I was on the right time and the right attraction, or with the right people to do incredible things. But when I just look right now at your portfolio back then with Altaphase, when we talk about Desperado, which is a small attraction, but there are so many really well-known rides in your portfolio, like
Yeah.
Mouse du Chocolat at Fantasialand, which is
Yes.
really well-known, the Smurfs Adventure at Plopsa Station Antwerp, which I really adore. It's such a cute attraction. Sesame Street in PortAventura, and one of my most favorite rides and most favorite interactive dark rides, I have to say, is Popcorn Revenge at Walibi Belgium. I mean, you have this very weird park next to Brussels. Back then, Six Flags Belgium. I still remember that time, long time ago. And they have the very first Sally dark ride in Europe, which was also back then, especially for fans, like, whoa, that thing is coming to Europe. We need to travel. We need to visit it. And when I was riding Popcorn Revenge, I was so amazed about the creativity and the innovation that was put into this ride. So, how do you describe your development from having Desperados up to trackless dark rides? And how curious do you have to be to go this far?
I think first it's kind of, you know, I'm afraid to, I mean, to use too many times references to Steve Jobs, but you know, the stay young, stay foolish kind of approach. I mean, that's the second one that would fit. I mean, I will stop there. I mean, promise I don't quote him for anything else than that. But I would say connecting the dot and staying young, stay foolish is really the two elements that are the most important element. And I'm not even sure that Steve Jobs, but anyway, that's a sentence. Basically, you don't care. I mean, basically, you need to go where you feel you have to go. No, very quickly, all the big changes that I've seen and I've made from Desperado to Monsieur Chocolat to Popcorn Revenge were really bold moves. Were really a moment that says, you know what, let's go for it. If I want to go to Monsieur Chocolat, that was really a very defining moment for Altaphase in this time. We had the technology used in Desperado, and it was okay. But I mean, we were not really grabbing a huge profit. I mean, the product is relatively cheap, and it's quite difficult to sell because, you know, it's not really a key attraction for a lot of park. And we were a small organization, so I decided to make a dark ride version of that. But I had to make it wireless. And my board of director at that time says, "You cannot," because I was inventing a lot of stuff and coming up with a lot of concept. And he says, "You can't make any new changes. You need to focus on the wire-based system. You know, you cannot go for a wireless system. You can't. So I've been, and I discovered that I had to make it wireless. So I said, you know, fuck that. I mean, fuck the board of directors. I will do it wireless. And so, one of my big friends at that moment was 3DBA, Roger Hubin. That is a company that was selling a lot of, it was really a linchpin for attractions. So he knew a lot of people. And he met Mr. Löffelhardt in Orlando, which had seen the ride, the Toy Story Mania. And he says, you know, it's great. It looks really cool. I like that ride. I like it. It's something in there. And then Roger Hubin asked me, says, can you do it in front of Mr. Löffelhardt? And I says, yeah, no problem. And then and he says, are you sure? I said, yeah. When can I see it? I says, you know, in 2 weeks' time. And the guy said, you're kidding me. He said, no. I mean, we have everything. I mean, it exists, it's done. And then he came, he said, 2 weeks is too short, but in a month's time, I'm coming to see you. And if you can show, then we might speak, you know. And that's how it went. And a month after, yeah, he came and we could show him something. You need to shake up everything. You need to shake up the organization. You need to shake up the minds. You need to be a wild atom, you know, like moving and making sure that all the guys that are more kind in a technical and a bit laid back sometimes, or, you know, kind of, how to say that, predictable life, you need to make sure that you bring this level of unpredictability, and suddenly you come with that. And with Monsieur Chocolat, Mr. Löffel trusted me. It was a very long process, very difficult process. It benefited ATF because they also could make their first big dark ride vehicles. That was the first one. They sold a lot of them in China mainly. So that was the stuff. And the same goes for Popcorn Revenge. Popcorn Revenge originally started in Cinecittà in 2013. And Cinecittà, you know, I've been visiting the guys there, and we were looking at this dusty place. I said, oh, how can you make a dark ride out of this place? I mean, what's funny? All those actors, we don't know them. You know, I mean, the young people do not know them. My generation still knew a few of them, but still they were kind of black and white actors, and black and white film actors, sorry. And so I was talking to the guy, and says, you know what? What a crazy idea. Let's use the show sets, you know, that you have there. And let's imagine that instead of actors, yeah, you have people watching it. And then automatically it says, no, not the people watching it, the popcorns. And then it came like this. I said, yeah, people are eating popcorns at the cinema, and the popcorns are fed up to be eaten, so they are very angry, and they decide to take over the show sets and to be acting themselves. And that was the pitch. No. That was the pitch as it was written in 2013, exactly the same pitch as we brought in 2018 at the Walibi. So you see, it starts from nothing. It starts from an idea, and then it start, and it takes a lot, frankly, a lot of resilience to get it to a final product.
And that's not only the technical innovation you've did with, especially with Popcorn Revenge, but also you created a brand, an IP around Popcorn Revenge. So you've worked with some non-IP stuff, basically general storytelling, but Popcorn Revenge was the very first concept you did with fitting merchandise, with the whole concept overall. So how was this process going on? Was this like an idea of you, or was this like
No,
something that Walibi
actually,
wanted?
we were kind of toying with the idea of making IP. And to be honest, we could have done different if we had this idea in mind. To be fair, we invented as we went. You know, we created as we went. Originally, the idea of an erratic ride was just a crazy idea floating in my mind. Looking at the ETF vehicles, I says, you know, what is the point of having trackless vehicle if it's to follow the same track all the time? So I says, why can't we do something different? So it took some energy to convince the people from ETF and to go for something that was non-linear. But I mean, that was floating already for quite some time. And for the IP, frankly, all credit to Walibi. That really saw the potential and the boss of Walibi Belgium, Jean-Christophe Parent, really jumped on the ball. I mean, he got it immediately, and he says, "Yeah, there's something there." And they added I mean, they really. I mean, that's a beauty when you have a park that is suddenly such an actor of making a ride, that suddenly the park is taking his own share of the stuff and he's sharing the vision and the enthusiasm. And that's what we've got with Walibi. Needless to say that I love to be there. Not that I'm a park fan, but I love the approach because that's a smart approach. And there are people that are, you know, they understand their business and they try to push it to the limit. So they really taught us about this. If it was to be done again, and that's what we've done with with other rides, we would design the characters to be easier marketed because the popcorn itself is a little bit complicated. As I mean, it was, you know, it took 6 years to get to the right popcorn on the screen, but it could have taken another 2 years to come to the right popcorn on the sh in the shop. You know, to have it efficient in terms of production and cost. It's an expensive stuff to do as but again, it took us so long to get the right, and I've been so annoying to everybody to get the right character. I mean, they hated me, and it explained a lot also about what happened afterwards. They really hated me for being so stubborn in getting the right faces for those popcorns, because to me, they had to be. I mean, they were the life of the ride, and so they couldn't be kind of taken for granted or, you know,
Sure.
done.
Yeah. I see that really, and I have to say I really enjoyed the ride and the overall look. And as you mentioned, Walibi is taking a great approach, especially in reinventing themselves right now. The company behind it has done so many things the past years that I really can't recognize Walibi Belgium anymore from the Six Flags parks that I was visiting
You
10
bet.
or 15 years ago.
You
That's
bet.
so crazy.
It was a disaster.
They've done a great job, and you have done a great job with IPs as well. When I look again at the portfolio, there are also some bigger names, like, as I mentioned already, Sesame Street, the Smurfs. You've also provided some parts for the Justice League's ride at the Six Flags Parks and the Night at the Museum ride at Genting SkyWorld in Malaysia. Would you say that is beneficent for theme parks and operators to have IPs, or would you say that is also sometimes too challenging, that you waste too much energy in IPs?
Okay, that is a very personal opinion on that. Okay, first, a lot of credit for the and a lot of credit decredit for the Justice League for Sesame Street is to be given to Sally Corporation, and we provide actually we enabled at that time we enabled their creative ideas. So I mean, there was between Sally and Altafis was some sort of a. We helped them at the moment that they were really struggling in with their interactive systems, and then that they were, so, you know, they couldn't really go very further with the Scooby-Doo and this kind of stuff. They were a bit stuck with their technology, and so I had a good discussion with John Wood, and John and myself will really say, okay, we will join forces, and then and that's really created a new era with the talents of course of Sally and the technology, the interactive technology that we could provide. So at that time, that was really the differentiating element. Now, speaking about the use of an IP in a park, it's a really tough issue. I'm working at the moment with a park in the Nordics that is really based on an IP, on a film IP, and it's complicated because. It could be complicated because a film has a limited lifetime. So it starts, and then you really need to know. I mean, the IP that is actually timeless enough that you have with Justice League, for instance, because it's exploited very well, etc. But do you have some IPs of Night at the Museum? I think probably the ride would be better than the film or Ghostbuster, this kind of stuff. I believe probably. But it's tough to find those caliber of IP that you can really make a ride of it, because I mean it's a big investment, and it's almost, you know, in some IPs, you know, it can come to $20 million investment for the right system on a movie that maybe was $100 million budget, you know. So the difference between the film and the ride that is based on the film is not so dramatic, if you see what I mean. So I mean it's really not kind of a 1 to 100, you know, it's 1 to 5, 1 to 10. So I mean basically it's not really such an incredible change. So I would be careful. The second element is that the IP that fits, especially for interactivity, I think there are too much interactivity with IP. That's how I would put it. I think they should take a step back from interactivity and make more IP without interactivity. I'm very curious to see what will be the result in the movie in movie park, not movie park, yeah, in Germany. What is it? No, fa not family park. What is it with the Smurf, right?
Oh,
Oh,
in
shoot,
Holiday Park.
holiday park. Okay, excuse me. I'm really looking, lo I'm really interested, because that's kind of a, it would have been a dream job for me, to be honest, because of the old ride system to be reborn with a new IP that was fantastic. And I think there they are taking the Smurf non-interactive, but with, you know, beautiful show sets, beautiful stuff. I believe that could be defining. But I would say there is nothing wrong with Dark Ride and IP, but sometimes interactivity and IP have a harder time, because you try to, how to say, to force people to do shooting-based activity with an IP, which is not always what has to be done. That's number one. B, you have a lot of characters in an IP that are simply not shootable or not applicable for a shooting ride. And C, what is the purpose of a ride? The purpose of a ride is to create an emotional bond between the character and the visitors. This is really what the dark ride is for. If you are kind of with a gun in your hand, you can miss this emotional bond. You can, I mean, it's better to really go and look at Disney. How many interactive dark rides are there? Not many.
True.
And they really used it, the dark interactivity, where really they could see the benefit of it. Otherwise, you are killing the IP sometimes. You know, you can't be stronger than the superhero. You know, I'm sorry. You know, you
Well,
need
with
to
a gun
stop.
in your hand, you're literally killing the IP.
Yeah, don't you agree with that? I mean, you see that with Justice
Totally.
League. I mean, the first stuff you go, you enter, the first thing you shoot at what you see on the screen. Bad news, it's a superhero that is on the screen, so you are shooting at the good guy. So what is the fucked up mentality of shooting at the right guy? So and it costs money, and it takes attention away. So I mean, I love interactivity where activity it applies. You know, when you have really an IP that has been taught to be interactive, and that is a perfect fit. Raving Rabbits, perfect in interactivity. Mushrooms, perfect in interactivity. You have a lot of stuff like this. But for others, sometimes, come on, no. I mean, it's not really what is needed.
I totally agree with you because the situation itself that you are, as you mentioned, you sit yourself into a vehicle which looks nice. We have a atmosphere around you. We have kind of a story where you try to figure out for yourself what's going on, and then suddenly you have a gun in your hand. You need to shoot things, and I don't want to be that guy pointing on, oh my God, they are shooting with guns in the theme parks on stuff, but. Yeah, it does. It has to make sense. That's absolutely agreeable, especially when you think about having a kids' ride. When I think about some smaller attractions, for example, at Legoland parks, where you have also a gun in your hand and you're shooting Lego characters. That doesn't make any sense in my mind. But when you twist it, like with Mars of Chocolat, you're not shooting with. You're not
Voilà.
killing them. You have like the chocolate and the cream that you're shooting. That's something else that's more fun. That's a fun way to do it. Or Toy Story Midway Mania, where you have mini
Absolutely.
games. You're not shooting things.
Voilà.
You're
It's not a
playing.
surprise. Yeah. Indeed. It's not a surprise that Toy Story Mania is one of the most successful interactive dark rides, because actually the variety and the fun you can get on the is there. The shooting, sometimes it applies. Cowboy things, why not? But again, and then let's, you know, let's look at other, and that's where the big challenge is, and you need to be bold again, is that there are other ways to do interactivity. And we have a couple of ideas. I mean, there are some stuff that will, you know, come in the coming years. But there are other stuff. There are other ways to create a bond, sorry, between the screen and the people. We can use the artificial intelligence, what we call the autonomous agent, so that actually the reaction of the characters can vary based on what you do or what you choose or whatever. So there is a lot of stuff to create this kind of solid bond between the visitors and the screens. It doesn't have to be destructive or shooting or this kind of stuff. It can be exciting while not be aggressive.
Yeah,
And I
good
believe
point.
that is, I think it's a mistake to believe that aggressivity is the definition of excitement. And sometimes, unfortunately, it's the case, hard, difficult, and you can create excitement without shaking people and make them shoot.
That's a good point. And we're talking about already about the future, but let's hop back to the present because right now Alter Phase is in your past. And in, I believe, 2020, you founded your newest company, which is Bold Move Nation. Why did you took this step?
Well, I mean, we were at the dead end with Alter Phase. So basically, those were the rough years. I mean, I'm a big fan of China, as you may know. So I love Asia and I love China. So I've invested a lot in China, and China didn't deliver on that time. So I found myself a bit in a difficult spot because basically, the big companies that were, kind of big contractor for us, kind of collapsed. The one that they have a grant, this kind of stuff. I mean, suddenly, so we lost a lot of contracts at the same time. And so it was a tough time. At the same time, fun. It was no longer so fun to be, kind of the interactive company. It was interactivity, interactivity, interactivity. And for a creative guy, or for a guy that is kind of excited all the time and works on excitement and enthusiasm, the conditions were not there anymore. There was nothing to be invented, and the company was at the same time too small to do big stuff and too big to go wild.
Yeah.
So basically, yeah, okay, that was a tough moment, and that was the right moment to revive a project from 2013, which was called Bold Move. And the idea there was to say, let's go wild. I mean, the world is big. There are so many different rides to do. There are so many different stuff that happens, and let's have fun. And basically, that is the definition of bold move, is really getting the enthusiasm speaking, and then try to discover new stuff to do. So obviously, you start from products that are a bit more stable, a bit more known, because this industry is not so nice with new concept. So I started with the, I mean, I had found that a big obstacle for a park to take over a dark ride were, to build stuff, to have the right building, to have the right stuff, and the budget. And so that's the reason why I decided to make, Smash and Reload, to say it is a compact dark ride that fits into existing building at an affordable budget, providing the same experience as the dark ride. It's working very well. I mean, the idea is working. The first prototype was what was a nice first prototype, and the second one will be brilliant. But basically, that was the idea. The idea was to say, okay, everybody think that you need, for instance, to I mean, let's put it differently. A lot of stuff that were done up to now is were up to then were actually. People are in the vehicle, slow moving vehicle, sound is not that great. You shoot at the screen, it's like plop, 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 plop. It's not very impressive. So it lacks enthusiasm, it lacks fun, it lacks, and that's why we changed. We put a vehicle with a big sound system, more dynamic way of shooting, more dynamic movements. So we recreate some excitement around the stuff, making them spin on them, but in a very compact enclosure, so that the teaming can be very, very intensive while not be expensive at the same time. So that
Yeah.
was really a new take on an existing ride.
And I really appreciate also your focus on efficiency, because smash and reload is also a concept where you have a high throughput on a very small footprint. So you have like this rotating system that you always batch dispatching and patching. No. Dispatching your vehicle while the next group is already waiting and can be boarded as well. So yeah, a pretty nice concept. But what I'm curious now is, first of all, why bold move? We talked about bold moves in your past. Is that the origin of the name? And the second one is, why is the interactive attraction type still in your mind? Is it now part of your own DNA?
Okay, first bold move. It's kind of funny because when I founded Bold Move, it was a moment where I had had some tough discussion. I mean, those were the moments of Mousse au Chocolat and those kind of stuff where I had very difficult moment with my board of director that didn't appreciate my way of trying to make new stuff. So I was always kind of I remember I came back home a bit pissed and say, okay, it's not fun anymore. I mean, I'm fighting against the company more than I'm fighting to do something I like. So, I mean, basically, and I want to do something different. And I had no clue, to be honest, I had no clue. I says, I want to do something different. But there's a very obvious element that what doesn't have a name doesn't exist. This is something that I always bear in mind. You need to give a name, and then you can put something under a name, but start with the name. Don't start with the concept. And so I says, I want to go wild. And so I start say, okay, and I'm actually, I was just shaving my hair, and says, and I'm bold. So, and I found this is, it's funny, bold move. And then I told my wife, I bought immediately the internet site, the website. So, and I told my wife, that's it. My concept is there. I says, what is your concept? It's not very clear, but it's going wild in doing what I'm doing, but with more energy, with more, like kind of forward vision. And it's bold move. And she's okay, so you have a name. She says, yeah, I have a name. That's already something, right? And then I've been over the next months filling up the stuff. But I truly believe that, you put a name, the concept comes right. And indeed, it was kind of a joke on me being bold, but also the fact of being bold in a bold move. And see, I'm finally reconnecting with the real inner myself, And bold move was really a name that was kind of describing what I wanted to be if I wasn't.
And innovation is still part of your company's values. And when I was in contact with you a couple of years ago, and was always in touch with Anya, and I see that you have all those concepts, and you have now the very first Smash and Reload in La Palle. And you have still other concepts like the Huba City, which I really would love to see on some point as a live build, because I'm a huge Masu Pilami fan. That would be a really great fan moment for me. But you're working also now on roller coasters. So why is innovation and technology such a huge part of your product portfolio?
Okay, the thing is first, I mean, let's put it, there are two different dimensions. The first element is that we are looking at technology, existing technology. So we are looking at the time at stuff that exists today. We try to give it a more global approach, a more family. I mean, we are really very much into this. I mean, today we call that inclusivity, but I mean, it's more kind of, I mean, one of my striking observation was really that there are a lot of people left behind in the parks. There are a lot of people that are not really enjoying it. I mean, a park is not such a happy place as people pretend it is. You have, people accompanying other people in the park. So, and I found, in the search of making a happy world, which is Anya's motto, and which I subscribe totally. I mean, when she told me, I think this could be the motto, I says, spot on, spot on. You read my mind. I wouldn't have been able to put it so nicely, and she did it. And so basically, say, what is the problem? I see the mothers are there, they're bored. I mean, there are a lot of people that cannot participate. And so, and the park tends sometimes to segregate people a bit. It's, you know, this you have the dark ride for the families, the ones that cannot go on the coasters. So they're spending fortunes in the coasters. You know, the bigger, the better, the bolder. And then, and on the other hand, I mean, it's hurting them to buy a kiddie ride. You know, it's kind
Yeah.
of complicated. And I says, you know, there is a big a spot that is not really well treated today. So we started looking at every time what can we do in order to make a ride. So it started with the VR water slider. The VR water slider is actually it's a simple simulator with a VR glasses. But the purpose of this is really to give access to people with disabilities to go for a ride. I mean, they can go for a. The purpose is to give the mothers in some countries where culturally women and men cannot go together, to the women that wouldn't be able to go with our kids in a water slide because it is simply not allowed by the culture or the whatever. She can do it. So basically, we made a product that is actually fitting a need of inclusivity somehow. I mean, I will not be the, you know, the Pope of inclusivity. I will don't give me a role that I don't have. But I mean, I believe that is it is an area that is a bit not so well looked after. And the dark ride was one way. So we made family dark rides, really family dark ride. The new versions of the Smash and Reload will be even more family oriented, more crazy even, and more kind of for a broad audience. And then the coaster. I mean, the coaster, come on. I'm scared to go on a coaster. I don't go on a
Really?
coaster. Yeah, I mean, that's like this. I mean, I'm sailor. I'm taking big risk in sailing, but coaster is too much for me. I feel like I'm gonna die. And so, as I said, what would be a coaster that would be good for the rest of us? And that is not a kiddie coaster. That is not kind of belittling. A bit kind of this is for the kids. That is a true family coaster. But family, everybody is abusing it. I mean, a lot of family coasters are not for family anymore because the kids need to be 1 meter high. So then it's not a family. Come on, what kind of family is that? It's a teenager. Let's put a name on the stuff. It's a teenager, right? And not a family, right? So we've came up with the Spinfinity. To say we want to make an affordable ride, super high quality of execution for, and as Anya put it, the 90 to 90, 90 centimeters high to 90 years old. Now, the 90 years old is just for the sake of having the 90. I don't think a lot of people 90 years old will go to the park,
Well, I
but
wouldn't
should
say
they will probably be.
that.
Yeah, they will probably be able to go for it. And we'll make it a nice execution because we respect the people. We respect the families. And you know what? There is a moment Park will discover that teenagers are not bringing the big bulk of the money. That the
Sure.
mother that doesn't want to go to a park with the family anymore, or the mother or the second mother of the father, whatever, you know, I mean, all kind that it will break, you know, which is by all means try to avoid going to the park or having a tough time there and spending as little as possible because she's not having fun. It's something that somehow people will start saying we might want to treat them better. And we have a lot of ideas like this. Spinfinity is just the first one.
Just the beginning.
Just the beginning, yes.
but I totally agree with you because it's like talking about sustainability. It has so many different definitions, and most people always think about the ecological aspect, but there's also like the economical sustainability, which we are looking into because that's what our industry is about, to have a long-term sustainable business model to work with. And I believe that inclusivity is one of the big parts to not only make the money which we need, because as you already mentioned, teenagers are not bringing the money into our attractions. So when we look back when Six Flags tried his big adventure in Europe, that's what that's
Absolutely.
the point where they failed. Just to having the teenagers in the park is not what makes your attractions successful. But when we talk about inclusivity on rides, that's what I see now with a toddler at home. There's not much we can do at theme parks or at most of the attractions. And when I look at my region, there are so many theme parks I can't visit because she's too small for all the rides. So there's not much to do. So I totally agree with you. That's something that we should all think about when we look at our own attractions in our theme parks or amusement parks. Are all people included in the rides? And when we talk about including, it's not having them also active on the ride, but also passively taking part somehow, I don't know how, in the adventure.
It's really making sure that everybody in a park has his best day. You know,
yes.
And that is the stuff. And I know it's a bit naive and maybe it's kind of illusional to try to do this, but it doesn't refrain us from trying. And when I see money is there for investment, I mean, I see all the hyper rides that are, you know, hyper coaster and hyper. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people shouldn't tell me that it's a question of budget availability. It's not true. That the offer is not seriously thought for that is a bit, you go to the very cheap one for the kiddies, but it's over. I think this will change. It might not change tomorrow, but it will change. I'm sure about it. When I started the interactive theater almost in 2006 was the first interactive theater, I wouldn't be able to say to tell that today there would be so many interactive theater under the name of Triotech, for instance, for the XD Dark Rides. I mean, they have hundreds of millions, I mean, literally hundreds of millions of people that have played on in interactive theaters.
Mm-hmm.
So no credit for me, but you see, that was an idea. People say it's not necessary. Hundreds of millions of people, frankly, I mean, this is not my numbers. Those are numbers from Triotech, have been on that. Yeah, okay. Maybe it would be worth, you know, trying to, you know, it was worth trying, you know. Of course, you have other rides even more successful than that. But okay, I'm not taking any credit away from anybody.
Yeah, but wouldn't you say, as a long-time participant now in this industry, that it's already changing? Because what I see is that this higher, faster, broader is already flattening out, especially in the European market.
Hang on, I'm just pushing, going to my, putting my charger in place. Because my battery is not making. Yes and no. I believe still. I believe there. I mean, when you're looking at the plans, you again. I believe there is a bit of where people are a bit playing with the words. The family coaster, for instance, are no family coaster for many. Okay, so I think it's more kind of a. And the fact is that a lot of parks are driven by attraction fans, you know, and they have they're used to go for the coasters. So, I mean, all the guys I know, they've done all my clients, they've done all the coasters. I only know one that's one in France that tells me he hates coaster, you know, because he cannot take it. And strangely enough, he has a different approach to coaster than the rest, which they're used to it. So you know, it's like alcohol, you know, when you are used to drink, you know, strong alcohol, you know, your tastes are changing. You see what
yeah.
I mean? And sometimes you need to be a bit more, you know, to start from a different perspective. So yes, it's changing to a certain extent, but not so much. I believe also because there is not enough offer on the market. But what I've seen is that I was in Norway a couple of weeks ago, and I was going to a park, and it says one of the most, I mean, they had a problem with a family coaster, a very small family coaster. I think it's a Zamperla or something like that. And it says it's so successful. And this is why. I mean, we have a problem of queue line. We have a problem of capacity on that one. Why? Because it is designed for the family and the kids, but all the teenagers, they love it. You know, so you see, This might be also a trend. You know, people probably that will be the trend that will lead the market to go even more inclusive, and yes, probably move faster. But I mean, there's still a long way to go, I believe. Honestly, there's still a long way to go.
Sure. Yeah, it still is, and I think that the whole transformation process is still going on. I mean, when we look back at the, especially for the German market in our history, it really took a long time till we had the very first themed rides. So we were really slow on this process. But when we look now at, especially Fantasialand, is I think the greatest example. What they are doing is outstanding and can easily be compared or compete with Universal or Disney or also Europa Park.
Absolutely.
So there are so many great examples. What would you say when we look once again to the future and talking about trends? We have now having all the families in the parks, have rides built for families that can participate in some kind of way. What would you say, where's our industry heading in the next couple of years?
My take is that the industry, I mean, first I see a bit of some dark clouds coming. Mainly, I mean, might be not for too long, but I mean, still see those dark clouds in the sense that, well, we see that people have less money than before, and you need to be really qualitative. I mean, you need to stop asking for more, 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 more. So basically, I mean, basically, there is people will, I mean, will either pay a higher ticket price to enter a park, or they will spend money, more money in the park. But that basically, the budget is there, and the budget won't change. So basically, we need now to find a way to offer a different, probably a set of offer for the visitors. Stop increasing the price, the entry price, like crazy, and start to be more completing the offer you're bringing in order to spend a complete day in the park. So I see this as a trend, is that I see more interest in doing different type of rides in order to promote the day experience, if you see what I mean. So I think an example that doesn't apply as such but could be interesting is Adrenaline from you know, movie park, a movie park, Europa Park. That's an interesting concept. Now, obviously, the way it is done today is very, very for the elite. It's a, but let's think a bit. Let's say how. I mean, frankly, I like the idea. There's some stuff to be done there. I believe that's a kind of a trend that we could see to make a day at the park in a qualitative experience from on all different type. So not only riding the coasters or riding the rides, but you know, like you have in Efteling, like spending a day at the park. You know, it's not only coasters Efteling, it's about, you know, taking some time off with the family, relaxing, doing some rides, but not only rides, and doing it more often. And because you have a park that you want to go there again and again and again, because they're designed for the family. I've seen Efteling-esque park in other place in Europe. I mean, I believe this is one of the trends. I would imagine that you have people to re can reconnect with new family, the new definitions of family, the old definition of family. But you know, this kind of stuff, I see that as a trend. For the rest, I'm flabbergasted by the fact that this industry is so lagging behind in so many aspects. When you're looking at the, you know, like polyester, how they're making the right systems. I mean, come on. I mean, we are in the 60s, in the 70s. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, they're using, I mean, I'm a sailor, so I mean, I know about boats, but we were building boats like this in the 70s. And now that's how we build rides. I mean, come on. I mean, bring some carbon, bring some fibers, and also bring some ecological elements. I mean, we are working a lot on that as well. Or in the ride offering, we propose a green alternative, so that is you know, natural fibers and ecological resin, so that we really go so into the mood of being more of a green project, a green approach.
Sounds like loads of topics that has to be challenged in the couple of years, but I totally agree with you on the point that we are still looking into how can we really connect to our target groups, and especially how can we make it more escapism. I wouldn't say immersive or immersion, because that always means that you have to be to adapt to a new environment and fall into this storyline, but just leave your everyday behind and just have a good time. I think that's the basic we should start on. And you're starting with those topics as well, as you already mentioned, with your products. So I think Boltmove is ready for the future.
I hope so. So you're right. I mean, you put the name on it. Escapism is the stuff. But frankly, one of our key approach was always to bring the family together and to bring the friends together. And you can see, and if you look at all the product we have launched and we will be launching in the future, you will see that this bringing people together approach is there. It's part of the DNA of everything we do. That is, and I believe that's a trend of the future because I mean, people need to be together, and also you cannot really scatter family between rights of the people that are not going to parks and they're staying home, and then the others are moving. I mean, this I believe is not compatible with what people wants to see today. And so yeah, I mean, I hope we are somehow in the future, or we will we are future proof. Only future will tell us if we were right to take this bold move.
I think we can finish this up with this bold move to have this look into the future. And the only thing I can say is, Benoit, thank you so much for your time and for all your insights. And for you and for Bold Move, I wish you all the very best.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
And as you can see, so many things have changed in the last years. The development is really moving on really quickly, and especially with Bold Move Nation and their creative minds behind their newest products. You can see there is a market, especially for small footprint dark rides. And it was a really huge honor to speak to Benoit, especially after working very close with Bold Move Nation on some projects for some times. And yeah, that's it. That was this episode. If you are new to this channel, I would suggest to subscribe in your podcast app so you don't miss any new episodes in the future. And if you're looking for more information about myself and my services in consulting on operations, just look into the show notes or visit my website www.stefanburian.com. Thanks for listening and have a fantastic time.